And welcome back to politics. Although I call it politics, my name is Presh, and the title of this episode is Bashar al-Assad Overthrown. I don't know why I said it like that. There's no question mark. It's a full stop afterwards. He has been overthrown. So some cleanup from last week, and last week news came in about the South Korean president declaring martial law. Like, I don't know how long it was. It's probably like an hour, maybe 2 hours before I recorded. So a lot of things were still in flux. All the facts weren't in, you know. I was still awaiting proper analysis before I, you know, just went in head first with this, right? And I just want to quickly check back in with the story before we get going on the news of this week, right? So South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol's future remained uncertain on Sunday, even after surviving an impeachment vote over his brief imposition of martial law. I don't know who wrote the story, but you'll be able to see in the bibliography the story I've linked, because I can't go to it right now. But brief imposition of martial law is, I don't know, it seems like they're downplaying instituting martial law. You know, it's a big thing. It's a big and it's a bad thing. They should be, you know, brief imposition doesn't give that feeling of big and bad, you know. But anyway, Yoon's party killed off an impeachment motion late on Saturday, even as huge crowds braved freezing temperatures to demand his ouster 4 days after he sent troops and helicopters to parliament. But the deeply unpopular president's survival may be short-lived, with Yoon's People's Power Party saying that it had effectively obtained Yoon's promise to step down in exchange for blocking his impeachment. Quote, "Through the orderly early resignation of the president, we will minimize the confusion to South Korea and its people, stably resolve the political situation, and recover liberal democracy," PPP leader Hang Dun-hoon said on Sunday. "Even before the president steps down, he will not interfere in state affairs, including foreign affairs," Han said after a meeting with Prime Minister Han Duck-soo. So, reading the story, I was just a bit taken aback. I'm not going to pretend that I'm an expert on South Korean politics, but they have both a president and a prime minister and the leader of the party. Usually, like in most countries, the leader of the party is also the prime minister, or, you know, if they're not in power, the leader of the opposition. But here, in this case, there's both the leader of the party, there's the president, and there's the prime minister. So, remind me to look into that in the future, because that's, you know, too many cooks spoils the broth, you know. Get out the kitchen, one of you cooks. Anyway. So yeah, there you have it. This right-wing ghoul is not going to face repercussions for his wrongdoing. Basically, the adults in his party stepped in and steadied the ship, but they let him get away scot-free with it. So it's definitely not what I wanted to see, because the talk last week was that he would be impeached and arrested. Neither of those things happened, so very disappointing and very disappointed in that. It was a disappointing result. Right. Now I want to give proper context for the story. I wanted to give proper context for the story, but that would take far too long. So the abridged version, so I made like a summary and then I summarized that summary, right? Is that in 1963, a far left-wing party called the Ba'ath Party overthrew a right-wing military dictatorship, which is good. But unfortunately, they themselves set up a left-wing military dictatorship, so that's bad. You know, some good, some bad so far. And After a couple of internal coups, a man named Hafez al-Assad takes over the Ba'ath Party and he becomes the dictator of Syria. This was in the 1970s, right? In the year 2000, he dies and is succeeded by his son Bashar al-Assad. It's not like he appointed his son. They had like mock elections where, you know, he came out first, but yeah, definitely not free and fair elections, right? And there was hope that Bashar will bring in modern ideas to modernize Syria and liberalize the economy, but he actually turned out to be just as big of a tyrant as his father, and in certain ways actually worse. So yeah, in 2011, something called the Arab Spring takes place. Basically, what happened was people in the Middle East begin to use Facebook and other forms of social media, and they begin to see how people in other parts of the world live. And when the people living under military dictatorship began to see how much better it was to not live under a military dictatorship, the people rose up in many countries to varying results, right? Some dictators were overthrown, some only strengthened their power, but particularly in Syria, a brutal civil war starts, in which Assad starts to use chemical weapons against his enemies. So his enemies are rebels from within Syria, so it's essentially his own people. He's using chemical attacks on his own people, right? And so for the last 13 years or so, the civil war has been going on, which leads us into the news for this week. Quote, a stunning advance by Syrian rebels ended Bashar al-Assad's decades-long rule, with opposition forces taking the capital and forcing the president to flee on 8 December. The overthrow followed a 13-year civil war which started after Assad crushed pro-democracy protests, killing more than 500,000 people and displacing millions more, and embroiled international powers and their proxies. The world is now watching to see how Syria's political landscape shapes up after the overthrow of the Assad family's half-a-century rule. So yeah, think about it. From 1970 to now, the Assads have been in power in Syria. So like, that's before the original recipe Star Wars. That's how long it's been, right? The other losers in the situation are Assad's allies in Iran and Russia, who have been helping the Assad regime stay in power. The winners are obviously the people of Syria, but also the US and Turkey, who financed and armed the rebels in overthrowing Assad. They both have, political interests that would be boosted by the overthrow of Assad, which is what happened. And so good for the people of Syria, and I'm happy. Now you're wondering, but Presh, you said this is a far left party, and aren't you far left yourself? And yes, I do agree with their economics, but I totally disagree with their military dictatorship. So there's plenty of times where I'm willing to criticize another left-winger or, you know, ideas being put forward under the guise of a left-wing idea, because I don't have to go along with anything, right? I call it like I see it, you know, I'm a straight shooter, as it was. So, you know, that's how you know you can take my word for things. And now, this next story just broke my heart. Hawk Tour, aka Hayley Welch, who went viral for saying, "Hawk Tour, spin on that thing," has been accused of running a pump and dump crypto scam, which really makes you lose hope in the world. If we can't trust Hawk Tour to give us financial advice, then who can we trust? To explain how it works, you buy the cryptocurrency at a low price. You gain some sort of hype. In this case, I assume they paid Hawk Tour an amount of money for her to tell her fans. I don't know what people who follow Hawktor are they fans or this weirdos, right? They pay Hawktor to tell her weirdos to buy this meme coin, right? Which makes the coins worth more. And then you sell the coins before anyone realizes that they're actually worthless, right? So Hawktor did that. She had a bunch of coins. She promoted that she had those coins. The value of the coins went up. She sold the coins, and now she's not promoting it anymore. So, yeah, I was being a little bit ironic earlier. Of course, if you invested in Hawktor's cryptocurrency, then you deserve to be scammed. There's really nothing else I can say about that. You've proven yourself to be very dumb. If survival of the fittest was still happening, you would be dead. And yeah. Now, the new story that everyone's been talking about this week. The UnitedHealthcare CEO, Brian Thompson, was assassinated. And, if you know me, you would assume that I'd be celebrating, I'd be making jokes, I would be high-fiving. But the official stance of this show is that all life is precious and no one deserves to die, right? That being said, I don't want to talk about Brian Thompson, nor do I want to talk about the alleged shooter, Luigi Mangione. And even if I did, details are still coming in, and I haven't had a chance to review everything. So I really don't want to comment on the story except to talk about private healthcare. And so I live in South Africa, which, just like the US, is we have to get private healthcare, otherwise you're fucked, right? In America, it's the same thing where America does have government-provided healthcare, but it's not worth a damn. It's the same thing in South Africa, it's not worth a damn. And that fucks over poor people, right? There are countless examples around the world. Like, if you've been following this podcast for a while, I went on holiday to Sweden a few months ago, and Sweden is one of the leading examples of the welfare state, as it was. People getting free healthcare, free education, etc., etc. I could go on, but the most important, I think, is healthcare, because you want people, if you are a government, you want your people to be healthy, correct? I don't think that's controversial or incorrect. I think that should be a basic thing. But anyway, I don't really have the stomach to talk about this killing. I just wanted to say that private healthcare is bad, it's expensive, and it actually leads to worse health outcomes. We're told that actually it needs to be more expensive so that money can go into research. That's actually also false, because the most amount of new patents are from government funded, in America I'm talking about, not the world, but the most amount of patents are from government funded studies. That's how new medicine gets made, for the most part. I'm not saying private healthcare doesn't do that. I'm saying they do it very poorly and they suck shit. So yeah. Thank you for listening. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe, give a like, etc. Portly needs to be a 5-star review. In the first Scream movie, when Scream calls Drew Barrymore and says, "Hey, Sydney, you wanna play a game?" That's me. "Hey, listener, do you wanna play a game with me? Give me 5 stars. Give me 5 stars, or I'm gonna cut you like a fish." That's what he does. He says, "I'm gonna gut you like a fish," and then he waggles his tongue around. But yeah, goodbye.